Welcome to Series 4 of Recruitment Journeys, the podcast series, in which we continue to pin down recruitment industry identities and leaders, and we find out how they came from where they came from and how they ended up where they are today. As ever, we'll do our very best to keep the conversation candid and authentic in the hope to inspire, educate, and motivate. My name is Pete Watson, and I have a rec-to-rec business that's been kicking around for the better part of a couple of decades. And this is my own little way of helping the industry learn from others who have been there and done it. The fourth series of Recruitment Journeys is proudly sponsored by our very good friends at Vincere, the recruitment tech platform created by recruiters for recruiters, and powered by the Recruiters Mentor Project. Check them both out at www.vincere.io and www.therecruitersmentorproject.com.au. Right, that's quite enough of all the corporate waffle. Let's crack on with Series 4 of Recruitment Journeys. Paul Tulip was a recruiter who unapologetically liked a drink. He proudly maintains to this day that some of his best mates that he ever made and some of the best memories he ever made were with a beer in his hand. He'd admit to anybody who's interested that having a drink was important to him and it was a part of who he was. Then on one standard Tuesday night, that all changed. Paul woke up at 1:30 a.m. on a normal school night, drunk and hungover, yes, it is possible to be both, and said, nah, I'm done with this. And that was 10 months ago. And aside from one very beneficial misstep, Paul has discovered a new life. Just in time for Dry July, he tells his story here today. Paul talks with so much clarity and passion, it's a riveting listen, even for somebody like me who hasn't drunk for almost 10 years. So if you are in any way sober curious, you simply must listen to the Recruitment Journeys podcast titled The Recruiter Who Quit Drinking. Paul Tulip, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I'm well, thanks. How are you? Thanks for having me again.
Again, mate, this is the third or fourth time we've done this. Not including the aborted mission where I sounded like Darth Vader and we just had to do the whole thing again. Amateur hour.
That's all right.
So thank you for your patience. Thanks for coming back. But mate, welcome to Recruitment Journeys. We, as you very well know, but if anybody out there is listening for the first time, this is it is a recruitment-centric podcast focusing on Australian recruitment identities. Hand-selected identities who we speak to about their journey, their life, their career, in the hope to educate, motivate, and inspire anybody out there who might listen to your story and say, if that's a cool story, I might have a bit of that myself. You've been on a few times, Paul, and we've talked about, you know, boring stuff like recruitment and your career and where you came from, all that kind of stuff. It wasn't boring. It was entertaining in small chunks. But today, mate, this could be very interesting. We're going to talk about the fact that you made a conscious decision to stop drinking 9 months ago. Is that correct? Have I got the numbers right?
About 10 and a half now.
10 and a half months ago. All right.
Yeah. Cool.
So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about why you did it, how you've done it, and how your life has been since. All of the above. And anything else we can chuck in there to assist anybody who might listen to this story and say, that's maybe something I should think about doing. But before we do that, before we get into it, I've already given you a brief introduction to the listeners, Paul, but in your own words, please keep it brief, mate, because you do have a tendency to drone on a little bit.
It's quite ironic coming from a guy who's still on his introduction, but go on.
Mate, please introduce yourself to the listeners.
Hey, my name's Paul Tulip, 42 years old, and I run my own recruitment company with my wife, Leah. Company's called Yorkshire Bridge. We've been on our own now for 8 years. Been in recruitment about 20 years, specialise in the retail and FMCG space at the exec level, and this is my story. Is that short enough for you?
No, that's good. Succinct. Father of two and one on the way.
Yep, two boys, 4.5 and 2.5, and no one really cares about that, but I'm just putting it out there anyway. And a girl on the way, got a daughter on the way, due in about 5 weeks.
Exciting times, mate. Exciting times. Well, that's, I suppose that's relevant to the story. That might, you know, parenthood might come into the story. We shall see. So this podcast is called The Recruiter Who Quit Drinking. Can we go back a stage, Paul? Can I ask you, how would you describe your relationship with alcohol going back over the last 10 years or so? What sort of drinker were you?
Yep. Okay. Well, I think I definitely, like many English people, started pretty early. So I think I had my first drink at about 15 years old, nothing crazy. You know, just the odd half a pint after a cricket game and things like that, probably a shandy. And then just advanced through the ranks to professional level, a bit like a, you know, karate expert, you know, going through all the belts. And yeah, I think at probably 41 last year, I felt like I probably completed it. Probably no new levels to work out. I just found that, yeah, it was just same old, same old. And yeah, so sort of always been a big drinker. Anyone that would know me would definitely associate me with drinking. Never a violent drinker, never a abusive drinker, but just sort of like accentuated my usual happy mood. So yeah, it would be like a regular drinker during the week. And then, you know, when I'm out on a session, it would get pretty big.
Okay.
More often than not.
So that was obviously a recurring pattern, recurring lifestyle, if you like. That was something that you lived with for many, many years. It was part of who you were. But clearly something happened, or maybe not necessarily something definitive happened, but you got to a point in your life. Will you tell us why did you slowly eventually come to the conclusion that drinking in your life wasn't something that you wanted anymore? Was there a straw that broke the donkey's back, or was it just a gradual tiredness?
Probably been toying with the idea of quitting drinking for a number of years, like probably 10 years. Like I would have said it a number of times over 10 years, like, oh, that's it, I'm not drinking anymore. And had regular stints where I'd just do a month off and do it with mates, you know, like Dry July, which is coming up, or, you know, sort of a weight loss challenge. And we'd say, let's quit the booze for a month, and always managed to do that, no problems, but just using pure willpower. And then, you know, learned nothing really from it and just got back on it and same old, gradually, you know, drinking like I was before. But yeah, I reckon over the last sort of 3 or 4 years, as the kids were getting older and more dependent on me, and I just wanted to do a lot more things with them, I felt like the drinking was holding me back. Like the hangovers were getting worse. The hangovers weren't worth it. And, got to the point, I remember went out on a Tuesday night. I go out every Tuesday night with a bunch of mates that live local. There's about 8 to 10 of us. We meet every Tuesday night. And it was a Tuesday night at the RSL, and pretty standard, really. Had quite a few drinks and then got back, and it's about 10:30, thought, oh, I'm not done. I probably fancy a glass of wine. That ended up being a bottle. And then just like woke up on the sofa about 1:30 in the morning, felt terrible. Went to bed, had a really restless night, and then woke up the next day and, you know, the kids were there and had a massive day of work ahead of me. And I was just like, why do I constantly do this to myself? And just, yeah, I just said to myself, right, that's it. I think this is it. I think my time's come. I just don't want this anymore. I don't like this feeling. And I just decided there and then, August the 4th, that was going to be my last drink.
I'm actually, because I don't drink as well, as I know that you know, some may not, but I don't drink as well. And I'm grateful for the hangovers, because I can still remember most of my horrible hangovers. Can't really remember the great nights that I had when I was drunk, because obviously I was drunk, but I can remember all the hangovers and never want to go back to those hangovers.
Yeah, the hangovers were just getting too bad for me, and it wasn't really worth it. Like, I could have 5 or 6 beers and wake up the next day and just feel horrific and just be like, I don't understand. That's not, I don't mind so much having a hangover when you think, you know, well, you deserve that after what you did. But it was just getting, yeah, too often. And I was just like, nah, this is just stopping all the things I want to do in my life. It was like, I'd get through everything, but I just felt like I was constantly running into the wind. And I just thought, God, imagine if this sounds cheesy as hell, if the wind was behind you rather than in your face, Pete, you know?
Yes.
I felt that every time I'm hungover, I just made life hard for myself. So I'd still go to the park, push the kids on the swing. I'd still go out and do the breakfasts and lunches or whatever commitments I had, play golf or catch up with people. But I just struggled and I just was counting down the clock to bedtime.
Yeah.
And I just hated that about me. I just was like, why am I counting down time when I know that time's the most important thing and everyone wants more of it and to appreciate it and be grateful for it. And especially as a dad, I just had the guilt all the time. I was just like, oh, and I just wanted in my head to be doing so many more things, but my body wouldn't allow myself to do them. And I'm a very productive person. I love getting stuff done, whether it's work around the house. Like we live on quite a big block of land and there's so much to do, like, you know, chopping wood, got chickens to bloody muck out, got massive lawn to cut, we've got trees to bloody cut and branches and leaves to blow, and like it, like real dad life stuff and boring as fuck. I'm sure you're just rolling your eyes when you're listening to this, but lots of things to do. And I like doing that. I like being productive. I like looking back at the end of the day thinking I've had a great day today. And I just, too many times where I just bounce all that and I'd be like, nah, not doing that, and just push the to-do list to the next day. And because I work for myself, didn't really have to answer to anyone to bounce a meeting, and you know, I can confidently ring someone up and make up a bit of an excuse as to why we can't do something that day and push it back the next day or do it through gritted teeth. And I'm like, why am I just making life hard for myself? Like the drinking and the times out weren't anything new anymore. It wasn't like, yeah, it wasn't like it was anything special. So I was just like, no, I just don't fancy this. So it was actually your podcast that I listened to on the morning. It was a Wednesday morning. And I remember you'd put a podcast up, which was 7 or 8 recruiters that had quit drinking that worked in similar space to me. And that drew my eye to it. I thought, oh, recruitment, people that don't drink, how do they do that? So I listened to that. A couple of the guys really resonated with me and they mentioned a couple of books. And it kind of all spiraled out from there. So I don't want to go too much into that detail if you don't want me to, but that's how it kind of started. I was like, right, I'm going to listen to something. And then it just all really gathered pace from there.
Well, mate, I mean, so you're saying that you woke up on the sofa 4th of August, 5th of August, something like that. That podcast did go out in August. Can't remember the exact date, but I remember using the very, very cheesy line to the people on the podcast, something like, you know, if we can help one person with this podcast, then it will have been a job well done. And not for one second am I, or indeed anybody on that podcast, taking credit for the good work that you've done, but it's lovely to hear that it played a small part. So what, aside from the books and advice that you heard on the podcast, and of course, I'll stick a link below, what else did you do from a strategy perspective to help you get through those first few weeks and indeed months?
Okay, so just to skim through that really quickly. So I listened to your podcast. There's one guy on there, I think his name's David Jackson, who's now brought out a zero beer that I think you're probably going to talk about later.
It's called Beneficial Beer.
Beneficial Beer. Yep. And he had put in a comment, because I'd commented on your podcast to sort of like say something flippant along the lines of, nah, I'd never give up booze. It's like, it's my life, it's my world, or something wanky like that. And he commented saying, read this book and come back to me. And the book was called Alcohol Lied to Me by Craig Beck. And I thought, well, you know, I respect him. I don't know the guy, but you know, if someone's drank all their life and then they found a book that helped them change their relationship with it at a point that I wanted to, I thought, well, now what have I got to lose? So I listened to that book and I got about 2 hours into that book and I rang one of my best mates, Phil, who lived in Brisbane, also big recruiter. And I know that he and I talked about our boozing a lot of times. Like he's got alcoholics in his family. He's always conscious of it, but he absolute machine. Like he could drink 3 or 4 bottles of red wine and go for a 20K run the next day and not impact his life at all, apart from what damage he might be doing to his liver and the fact that his kids were probably seeing a bit too much of him drinking, but the most super dad in the world. So like from the outside looking in, he was pretty okay with it, but I knew deep down that he would probably benefit from this. So I rang him and said, I'm 2 hours into this book. Like it's a bit cheesy at parts, but like there's so many good things in it. You should listen to it. Just even if you listen to it and say thanks, but no thanks, just do it for me. So he started listening to it, which was also dovetailed in nicely with a lot of the guys on your podcast saying that the best way is to try and get a buddy to do it with you and have someone to go through this journey with you. And Phil then listened to the book and rang me and said, this is amazing. I'm loving it. Let's just I'm going to quit too. So I quit on the 4th of August. And then a week later, by the time he'd finished the book, he was like, right, I'm ready, I'm done. And he still doesn't drink to this day as well. He's never had anything. So then after that, we really liked that book and we downloaded the app called I Am Sober, which tracks all of your, you know, each day, and you write a pledge, how do you feel? And if you're going through any bad thoughts or good thoughts, you share them on the community and you can listen to like-minded people going through the same milestones as you at their 1 month, 2 months, 6 months, whatever. And that really helped. But because I was like then just really loving hearing about other people's journeys, I wanted to learn more and I wanted another book, another perspective. So then I listened to another book that one of your people on your podcast recommended, which was called, it was by Annie Grace, and it was called The Naked Mind. So I listened to that. It was okay. I still thought it was good. And then I was already quitting drinking by then. I didn't need it. I just thought I'd get a few tidbits out of it, which I did. And my mate Phil listened to that as well. And that was basically it. The only other thing that I would say was an absolute savior for me, and you'll think I'm taking the piss here, but it was alcohol-free beer. I'm not just trying to plug your mate's new brand, but I'm a massive beer drinker, always was. And through lockdowns and stuff, it'd be my thing to go and get different beers every single week from Dan Murphy's, and me and my mates would all, you know, compare notes, and we had a spreadsheet running of what IPAs and all that, you know, we liked. And it was, the strength was getting stronger and stronger as lockdowns got increased. We'd be like, I'm having a 10% beer can. Like, of course you are, you're an alky. So it got to the point where I still needed that obsession about something, but the zero alcohol beers that I tried in the past were all just worse versions of beers I didn't like anyway. And I won't name them, but it's like, you're not going to like an alcohol free version of a beer that you don't already like. So yeah, I found a couple of beers that really worked for me. There were pale ales and XPAs that were just so like real beer that it just absolutely quashed it for me. And I'd smash a couple of them at the end of a day's work and really feel like I was having a beer, but then not having the repercussions was just like, oh, this is amazing. Absolute game changer. And my mate got onto them as well, and they saved us through the first couple of months. We were just, I think we tried 27 different alcohol-free beers. So we did that together, which was great. And yeah, I'm actually doing a podcast next week with the founder of a massive online business which sells alcohol-free beers to, or alcohol-free drinks. And that was just reaching out to her, just basically saying, thanks so much. Your website and all the orders that I had through giving up this thing really helped me. I'd love to talk to you about it. So I'm doing one with her actually next week before Dry July starts. So that's just a little plug for her. But the alcohol-free beer things was just massive for me. But now, 10 months in, we don't really bother with them anymore. The novelty's sort of worn off. We don't crave them. I can go to an event and not have them. It's fine. But I still enjoy one every now and again. But yeah, it's not. It just really helped me at the start and then just weaned off it now.
So 10 months in, mate, has it been plain sailing? Has there been any kind of blips along the way?
Yeah, I had a blip. So I got to about 5.5 months, went down to my wife's parents got a beach house down in Blairgowrie, which we always go to over Christmas. And I was down there, and her dad loves wine, and her dad's like the most Australian guy you'll ever know. And I always thought, be a bit nervous, like telling him that I wasn't drinking anymore, because we always like drank beers together and we always had red wine together. But he was a brilliant drinker. Like, he would only have 3 or 4 and he would stop. And I always admired the way that he could do that. But he loved a drink. And I always thought, oh, it's going to be difficult being around him and like sort of justifying that I'm not drinking anymore. But he was brilliant. But when we got down to Christmas, I thought, oh, maybe I could just maybe have a drink and try a few wines. And I tried a few here and there. And I thought I'd cracked it. And I thought, oh, no, I've reprogrammed myself now. I think I can trust myself that every time I have a drink, I'm not going to want to sort of kick on, because that was always my problem. Can't just have one. So, and I just felt, as soon as I had it, it's like Frank the Tank off Old School. As soon as it hits your lips, you have that feeling of like, oh no, the devil's coming on your shoulder and telling you to have another one. And I kind of felt it, but when I was down there, and it was like, you know, family holiday, I'm not going to go full Frank the Tank on him. But I just felt that niggle, and I was like, oh, I don't love that. I thought I would have cracked this by now. And then about a week after that, I had to come back here to feed the chickens. That's not a metaphor. I actually had to feed the chickens. And I brought the kids back for a couple of nights. And my mate came over with his kids and we put them all to bed. It was a Friday night. I think it was January the 8th. I remember it clearly. And I thought, tonight I'm going to have a few drinks with my mate Will, and I reckon I'm going to be all right. I'm just going to take it steady. Because I really thought in my head I'd cracked it. I thought, oh, I was a big drinker. Now I've realized that you don't have to drink all the time, and I'm going to start drinking again, and I'll just be sensible. And I reckon I'd had four beers before he'd even finished his second one on that Friday night. And then I was into like getting a bottle of rosé out, and I was like, I really want to try this rosé. I haven't tried rosé for so long, and had a sip, and I just could tell. I just knew in my head I just wanted to get drunk. I wanted to feel that different, you know, how I wanted to feel a bit of a different mindset, you know, a bit of a like lose myself a little bit. And it didn't get crazy or anything, because obviously we were looking after the kids and stuff, but I'd had more than I'd ever had for ages, and went to bed at like 10:30, nothing crazy, but I woke up that morning with that all familiar hangover, and he woke up absolutely fine. Like, and I was too embarrassed to even say I was hungover to him, and he's one of my best mates. I didn't want to make it a big thing. And he left at about 8:30, and then the kids were here, and I had that horrible feeling in my head. And that's when I just like was like, I'm never, that's it. I'm so pleased actually that happened, because it was like, nah, you haven't learned anything. You just can't drink anymore, because you just can't. You just, all you want to do is like kick on. So, and the kids were there, and I had the responsibility of them, trying to entertain them. And the guilt came back, and I was just like, nah, that's it. So that was January the 8th, and that was the last time. That was my slight wobble, which I'm a bit disappointed about now. I rang my mate that I'm doing this with in Brisbane, and I told him. And I even told him when I was trying wine down at the beach house. And he goes, nah, good for you. If you think you're all right, that's fine. He was really encouraging and supporting, didn't tell me not to. But then when I rang him on the morning of the 9th of January and told him, he goes, I knew this would happen. He goes, I didn't want to say anything. I needed you to find out yourself. Yeah. He said, but my sister's an alcoholic, and I told her that you'd kind of started drinking again. And she said, nah, this will end in tears. He's not that kind of person. He can't do it. But he let me run, and I worked out for myself. And then I just agreed and said, no, that's it. I'm never drinking again. And I haven't had a drink since. So I'll never.
I think it's a wonderful thing that happened.
Yes.
And so early on, because the benefits of it, because if that hadn't happened, you'd probably still be every now and then, you know, working against some kind of niggling thought in your mind. Oh, maybe I am.
Yeah.
Maybe I am rewired. Maybe I can't do this.
Nah. And it's a shame, because I remembered listening to all of the book and knowing it. And I just knew, because it said this is what's going to happen. And I just, my ego got the better of me, and I blocked it out and thought I could beat it and thought I was better than it. And I was just like, nah, just so comfortable with understanding where I am now with alcohol and what it is for me and what it can and can't be, that I'm just like, just, I just needed that final lesson. So I'm really, really thankful for it. But yeah, that was the last time, and will be the last time.
Okay. All right. So does that mean that you have decided to never drink again?
Absolutely. I decided, well, that January the 9th, that was it. I was like, that's it. Don't have to ever, I'll never drink again. And as soon as you start to own it, yeah, and say you're never drinking again, it's so easy. Because as soon as you give anyone an in, hardest part about drinking is justifying to your friends why you're not drinking. Or even worse is justifying to your tier two friends, the ones that you don't really and shouldn't have to explain to, but people that are in your life, or you bump into them, you know, you've only met them once. That's the hardest bit. But I feel that as soon as you start to say, no, I don't drink anymore, and you own it and you explain, if you take the time to explain to people why you're never drinking again, then it's easy. But if you're flippant with it and say, oh, I'm just having a few months off, or, you know, I'm just having a break, or, you know, whatever, I'm doing a health kick. If you say that and give them an in, yeah, that's the worst thing you can do, because people will then start to try and talk you out of it. And, oh, start next week, or don't worry about it, or just have one. And, oh, I've done it before, I've had a break. Like, everyone wants to tell you they've had a break, and I've had a break once, but everybody's relationship with alcohol is different to yours, and you know deep down how it is for you. And if alcohol is starting to affect your life negatively in any way, then it's a problem. And I've got a load of mates and a wife that have amazing relationships with alcohol, enviable. They can have a few drinks, not kick on, they enjoy it, they never get crazy, and that's fine. But that's just not me, and it took me 42 years to realize that it's not me. And I'm so comfortable with it now. I don't miss it. Like, if someone said to me, you can take a pill and as of tomorrow you'll never want to have more than two or three drinks, you'll never have a hangover, I still wouldn't bother. I'm just so happy with not having it in my life anymore. It just, all the complications and chaos are out of my life. I'm not taking any backward steps ever. Everything I want to do, I do. I'm not letting anyone down, not letting myself down. It's just, there's no way I would ever touch alcohol again, because I've got too much to give up. Like all the things I gain now from not drinking are way more important to me than what a night out would be, a few beers or a session with the boys. Like, no interest.
Hey, just breaking away from the conversation for one quick minute, just to let you know that Recruitment Journeys is brought to you in partnership with Vincere, the new breed tech partner, purpose-built for recruitment and staffing agencies worldwide. Designed for agencies only and not HR, Vincere is the secret weapon for progressive recruitment firms across Australia, New Zealand and beyond. You can learn more about Vincere on my exclusive interview with their CEO and founder on Season 2, Episode 14 of this podcast. In the meantime, if you're looking for a new recruitment CRM to accelerate growth and give your recruiters an edge over the competition, please visit vincere.io/mint for an exclusive offer for all listeners of this podcast. Now, back to the chat. So, mate, you just touched on this. What one of the biggest hurdles that, it sounds like it played a part in your story, certainly played a part in my story, was, I suppose, the trepidation and anxiety around making it public and talking to people and how they would react and how you would be viewed and, you know, would they think I was boring, all that kind of stuff. But in reality, that was never my experience. People either were supportive or didn't actually give a shit. You maybe weren't as significant in their life as you thought because your ego was in charge. Have you found that the vast majority of people that you've opened up to about this are supportive?
Every single person that I've taken the time to articulate to of why I'm giving up, and it takes time to actually process why that is in your head as well. So you'll find as the journey goes on, the more days there are between today and your last drink, the better you can actually put it across. But in the early days, even when I was trying to explain in my mismatch of a way to my close friends and family why I was giving up the booze, I had nothing but support.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. But I did feel that, and I could see it in people's eyes, that they were just worrying that, are we not going to get all the good bits of Paul being drunk, like of all the nights out and of all the stuff, you know, and what they've all said, which has been amazing. And because I've done everything now that you can imagine sober, Bucks parties, big milestone birthdays, weekends away with the lads. I've done all of those things. And every single person has unpromptedly said, it's just actually better with you not drinking. Like there's no negatives at all. We don't think, oh, we're missing out. It's like, if not, your banter's even better because it's prolonged and you don't go to that state where you're like, you know, you're obviously too drunk to be as quick as you normally are. And people have said, if I didn't know you weren't drinking, I would have no idea that you weren't drinking. And that's the worst part. When people know you're not drinking because they physically see that you're not drinking and try and have a go at you and say that you're boring or, you know, I can't believe you're not. It's like, well, if you had no idea, you wouldn't know. And that's why zero beer is really good, because the less opportunities people have to have a go at you for not drinking, the better, because they don't realize. I've been on nights out and then driven home and people have gone, what are you driving home for? You can't drive your home. And I'm like, because I've not drank all night. And they're like, you are kidding me. I just haven't been bothered to tell some people because I just couldn't be bothered, like on a Bucks party where I'm never going to see these people again. Why do I want to spend 3 hours of my afternoon explaining why I'm not drinking to somebody? Like, I wouldn't do that to them and chew their ear off for 3 hours asking, why do you drink? So, sometimes I just don't bother explaining it. But the friends and the support and everything has been, my mum and dad were over from the UK recently, and I know they were really proud of me just like not drinking, because they've always known that, you know, drinking's been a bit of a problem for me and it's had some negative implications. I've never got to that point in my life where I thought, oh my God, I'm have to give up, otherwise I'm going to lose everything. I've never had that. That's what I really like about this. It kind of came from me. There's no one else telling me I should do it. Like even Leah, my wife, who we like, our relationship was built on drinking together and, you know, working in recruitment together. And at the start, she was like, oh, you know, maybe I'll miss the times that we went out drinking together. And, you know, she was anything but saying, oh, this is great, Paul, you have to give up. But her having seen me now in this version of me, she's just like, doesn't even worry about me drinking again. Like, she's like, I know you won't, because look at your life now compared to what it was. There's no way you'd derail because you're just loving it too much. So, yeah, anyone who's worried about what their friends and family will say, then I'd say if they negatively react to you telling them about it, then you need to get them out of your life anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the people, and this is not the reason you do it, but the people who are nearest and dearest to you, you know, my loved ones, still, after nearly 10 years, with reasonable regularity, tell me that they're proud of me, because it was something that was, you know, it was a ball and chain, you know, couldn't shake it off for many years, and then eventually somehow managed to do it.
Yeah,
and that's an achievement, and people, you know, the people who know you the best and love you the most, it's as important to them as it is to you, because
yeah, absolutely,
they don't want to see somebody in pain, right?
No, absolutely. And I was like, people have said to me since, like, which I never really understood at the time. They were like, a few people have said, I just love the new version of you, because when we get to hang out, I actually get to really hang out to you and have a proper conversation. Whereas before, it's sort of like million miles an hour, and then you're on one, and, you know, as much as it's fun, you know, we sort of lose you. Whereas sometimes I'll catch up with you, and then the missus or the friends will say, oh, how was Tulip when you saw him? And go, no idea, he was away with it, you know, he was on one, it was hilarious, but like, I've no idea what's going on in his life. Whereas now I have these massive, you know, deep and meaningfuls with people, and it's a lot of my close friends piss themselves because I ask them things all the time and they go, I can't believe you don't know this, we've covered this so many times, Paul, how do you not know that that's my favorite movie, how do you not know that my mum committed suicide when she was 53, like things like that. I've gone, oh, really? And she's like, oh my, not laughed about it, but they're like, yeah. So you just have all those much more quality conversations with people, which I love. It's quite funny because a lot of people who say you're antisocial and boring when you're not drinking are the ones that when you try and have something engaging to say to them on a night out, they'll like shove you away. You're like, don't talk to me about my kids and how my job's going. I just want to get shit-faced, you know? So it's quite ironic. I had a do this recruitment lunch every year. So everyone that I used to know through recruitment in the city, we get together every year for Christmas. We have this annual lunch and it's always been massive. And this last Christmas was the first year I'd ever gone to it without drinking, and I was really nervous because it's at someone's house, it changes venue every year, so I knew that I could bring my zero beers, but I knew that someone was going to clock them, and I just get so much. I knew this was my biggest anxiety around going to an event since I'd stopped drinking. I just thought, I'm going to get so much, I'm going to have it in my ear all day. And sure enough, when I got there, within about 20 minutes someone came up to me and saw me drinking a Heaps Normal XPA beer, and they're like, what is this, Tulip? What is this shit, in front of everyone?
Yeah.
And I've never been shy and lacking in confidence, so I could own it and make a bit of a piss take out of it. And I just owned it, and I just said, yeah, I don't drink anymore, mate. I don't need it. I don't need it like you do, you know, to, you know, let your hair down. I'm just gonna be here today and enjoy the company of people I don't see very often. You know, really played up to it. And he couldn't let it go. For like first hour and a half, he was in my ear, and to everyone else, going, oh, fucking Tulip, how boring is he now? I'm thinking, like, what do you expect me to do? In the hour that I would have been here drinking, I'd have had two normal beers. What do you think I would have been doing? Like, the worm jumping in the pool? Probably would have been, but I was just like, you know, you've no idea. Anyway, so I got quite a lot of shit that day. But what was really funny is the day went on and on and on. There was 12 people there, and six of them came up to me unannounced and said to me that they wished that they could have a break of alcohol. Like, they were so, not jealous wasn't the word, but enviable. Like, I just... And people were saying, I'd love to do what you do, Paul, but, you know, working in recruitment, I just can't. You know, you've got your client lunches and all that. And I'm like, yeah, looking at them like, hello.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love to do what you do, but I've got kids, and sometimes all I need on a nighttime is a glass of wine. I couldn't do it sober. And I'm like, So I kind of just, you know, humoured them and whatever. But six of the 12 came up to me and said, you know, I actually need to. And two of them, actually, out of them six, said their doctor told them they needed to stop drinking. Like, it was that bad. And I drove home that night. I got there at 12, lasted till like 10 o'clock, drove home. And honestly, I had a better day than the previous 7 years before, because I'd actually caught up with everyone, had good chats, yeah, enjoyed the food, like ate the food, which I didn't normally do, and cleaned up. And I was, serving cocktails, and I was on it, and I was loving it. I was like, help enabling them. And that's something I love now. I love seeing people get drunk. I'm happy with that. Like, I don't look at like an anti-smoker and be like, oh, you know, you, it's poison, you shouldn't be doing that to yourself, read this book. I love it. I'm like, good for you, go for it. And I was happily enabling that. And that's what one thing I've realized is that I've had so many catch-ups since with good friends, me and my mate Phil, that I gave up drinking with. We went to Cairns recently on a boys weekend, and it was tame. Me and him were just hoping for like carnage, that we could be sat back like going, look at these guys, they're off their heads. But they were just happy and drinking and being sensible, and they had a few, but nothing crazy. And we were just, we've realized this so many times, that we were the enablers. We were the ones putting pressure on our mates, saying, have a shot, let's do this, let's do that. And without them, and we said to them, like, why are you all just like not going crazy? Like, why haven't you got any roadies for the journey to the fishing? Why haven't you got a six pack for golf? Why haven't you got this? And they're like, we're just, it's not a thing. Whereas me and Phil realize it's a whole world. Like, it got to the point with me and Phil, we go trick or treating with the kids and we'd be taking a six pack. Cause like, why would you do that sober? And everything involved a beer. And when you're the kind of person that you have one beer and that's it, you're on one, it's dangerous in this day and age. You go to get your hair cut, you get a beer. Guy goes, oh, there you go. Nice having a beer, isn't it? And you feel like saying, it's for you, mate. Now I've got to go home and carry on with this. And I've got commitments that I need to do tomorrow that I'm now going to absolutely derail on because of this one innocent beer you've given me while I've got my hair cut. So it's been a journey, mate. It has been a journey, but it's been brilliant. Me and my mate have had many a good time laughing about it and laughing at ourselves, thinking what idiots we were. We were those people. Don't be such a pufter. That's what we'd say. It's horrible. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Can't believe you're not drinking. Oh, don't be like that. Come on, don't be boring. That was me. I'm really ashamed of that. And I'll never do that again. It's like when people, you know, you shouldn't ask people about why they're not having kids. My advice would be don't ask people why they're not drinking if you're not prepared to really have a listen, because you never know what people are going through. Like, I wasn't going through any dark stages in my life that, you know, I was going to, you know, be really depressed or I was, you know, going to lose a job or anything. But I was mentally just not there with it. I was not enjoying it. And yeah, I would just say to anyone that's like, yeah, just be careful next time someone isn't drinking in your group. Embrace it and let them talk about it if they want to. Don't give them any shit for it, because I look back at me doing that now and I think, oh, that's really bad. Like, that's just something that you shouldn't do anymore.
Good advice, mate. Good advice. So look, clearly you do not miss it, obviously.
No.
However, do you wish you'd done it sooner?
No, I don't actually. I thought about this a lot because it was the perfect storm for me. It just came at the right time. I think you've got to really, really, really want to do it. And that's why if you're going to try and get a buddy to do it with you, you've got to make sure they're, well, they can do it to support you, but like it helps if they're really ready for it. And no, it was just a perfect time for me. I just felt that like nothing else I needed to do, that I've been on enough Bucks parties. I've been to Vegas a few times. I've done all these things that like the, felt like I completed it. I've completed it, you know, like Jay off in between us. I completed it, mate. So I felt like the timing was perfect for me. And if I'd have given up 5 years ago, maybe I wouldn't have got to that. Maybe I wouldn't have been ready enough. I don't regret now. I just think it was perfect, the perfect timing for me. And I also said this to my mate the other day, my mate Phil in the Brisbane, mate. It was like, do you imagine what your life would have been like if you'd have never drank or you'd have quit at uni? Like, imagine, would you have still got mates in, like, from uni? Would you have still fitted in? Would you have been the weird guy around the cricket club that didn't drink? And would your life have been crap? Because at the start of this, we were saying, drinking's given me my best memories I've ever had. Like, all my most amazing memories are all drinking related. I've bonded with people that I've got lifelong friendships with. I've been away with people. We've done all these crazy things where booze has been involved. I go, imagine how, and we said at the start, imagine how boring your life would have been if you never drank. But then my mate was the one that said, well, do you think your life is more interesting now since you haven't drank? And I'm like, no, I think my life's way better in every single way. I have more fun and I do more things and I'm more productive and all these list of things. Mm. And he's like, well, why don't you think that would have been the case if you'd have had 20 years on this? And you start, and it's a hard one, because I know that particularly in England, at university and stuff, if you didn't drink, I don't care what anyone says, you would have been an outcast.
Yeah.
But I think as time's gone on now, maybe there's more people that don't drink and it's a bit more accepted that you would find and gravitate to those people that are in that same boat as you. But yeah, I like the fact that it's now more acceptable and that the non-alcohol range is booming in Australia and there's alcohol-free bars, and it's good that it's being talked about a lot more.
Mate, it's almost becoming cool, right? It's almost becoming cool to not drink. And if this is what the young people, you know, coming through are seeing and hearing, then it can only be a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I've become really like a big, like trying not to preach about it, because I can tell that how it can come across sometimes. But I'm just so passionate about how it's changed my life and how good it is for me. And I would like other people to experience it. And if someone said to me, do you reckon everyone should not drink? I'd be like, no, absolutely not. I think there's people out there who have an amazing relationship with booze and that love a drink, and it helps them in other ways. Like, cause I've never drank because I don't feel confident enough to talk to people at parties or, you know, do all that. So I've never had an issue with that, but I know there are some people that use it as a bit of a tool to, you know, get loosened up a little bit and have some confidence to, you know, to be able to engage in a social situation. But I would recommend that every single person has a decent amount of time off alcohol, if only just not to prove to yourself that you can do it. And I wouldn't say do 30 days because I've done so many of them over the years. And I just honestly think it does more harm than good because you just obsess about it every single day. You've got an end point. So I think in 90 days would be a great time for someone to do it because then you'll then get to, you can't put it off. Like most people who do 30 days off the piss say, oh, I can't do it then because I got a 40th. I can't do it then because I got a thing. If you do 3 months, there's going to be things in your life that you never thought you could do sober and you'll just have to do them. And the more things you do sober, it's the best feeling ever. You'll come away and you'll be like, that was actually really good. And it could, for me, it was like family dinners, like the idea of doing it sober and not getting smashed at them, but like not having a few beers and a glass of wine and all that, but just being more present and enjoying it. And you get to the point where you think, actually, this, my time here is done. You'll realize that there's so many things that you were doing that you thought were great, but they were only great because you were drunk and other people might have been drunk there with you. But when you go and do them sober, you get to the point where you go, no, we're done here. Family dinner. We've seen everyone. I've done all my niceties. I've talked to everyone. Let's go. And you leave at a reasonable time and you think, this is how it should be. And there's been so many events where I've thought, you don't need drink at all. I actually drink probably just complicates it. So once you do the 3 months off it, you'll go through all of those things and you'll realize yourself, but you can't, if you start saying you're going to just quit drinking forever, it seems too far. It's too hard to think about your life without drinking it. Like that was me. I'm like, there's no way I can give up drinking because it's all I do. Drinking's my main thing. Like go in the city, meet the boys for a drink, catch ups with clients and candidates, drink, drink, drink. And I thought that, yeah, I just couldn't do it. But then, like you said earlier, you think it's bigger in your head than it is for other people. Some people just don't even make a big deal out of it and go, oh, yeah, nice one. But I think that's because drinking for them isn't what it is to us. For me, drink. Someone who says to me, oh, I could give up drinking easily. I'm thinking, you probably can, Cheryl, because you have two sherries on a Friday night and a Bailey's on a Sunday. Of course you could give up. But with me, you know, it's much more of it was a lifestyle for me. So it's easy for some people, but having an elongated break would be brilliant. But try and get someone to do it with you. I'd definitely recommend that.
Okay, quick competition break, people. A good friend of this podcast and fellow non-drinking recruiter, DJ Dave Jackson, has only going to start his own award-winning alcohol-free beer called Beneficial Beer. Dave has very generously offered up a case of Beneficial Beer to one of you lucky listeners. All you have to do before the end of Dry July is send me a direct message on LinkedIn telling me why you should be the recipient of this case of 0% beer. The best answer, be it funny, thought-provoking, moving, whatever, will have a case of Beneficial Beer sent to them. Back to the chat with Paul Tulip.
I love the concept around getting through little events, and for me it was little milestones. And you would start small and you would get bigger and bigger and bigger. And every time you did something bigger and bigger without alcohol, all you do was you reassured yourself that this was possible. The one that I thought I was going to really struggle with was getting through the airport. Because whenever I get to an airport, I get ridiculously excited.
Yes.
You're on holiday.
Yeah.
A lot of the time you're on your own. You've got 3 hours to kill.
Yeah.
It was the perfect drinking environment. And the first time I got through the airport and sat on the airplane, sober as a judge, it was an absolute hallelujah moment. It was wonderful.
Yeah, well, I had to do my airport one recently. We went to Cairns with the boys and they all said, oh, well, let's meet 4 hours early, A, to get away from their wife and kids, and B, to, you know, get into the lounge and start drinking. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. I'll go early. And they were just like getting on it, you know, not going crazy, but they were drinking and drinking and drinking. And I was just sat there like for 4 hours just thinking, I was doing mostly work. Like I was just like doing stuff that normally would have been that. I'm on holiday, that can all wait. And that was fine. But I was just like, yeah, this would have been an environment where, yep, I would have been cartwheeled by the time I got off at the other end. Mm. But yeah, it's just, and then you do it and you just think, yeah. And there's been like Saturday afternoons where people go, let's meet at the pub and we'll bet on a few races and we'll have a, you know, whatever. And you go there and after a while, you just think, well, the only reason you'd stay here is if you were drunk. Like there's nothing left here for me. And that's when you do get shit when you go home. People, oh, you're boring. You're like, actually, without preaching, you're the one that's boring because you told me the same thing 3 times in the last hour and you're not doing anything new. But I just think as time goes on, you find that you just get the confidence to tap out of those situations, and you just be like, "Nah, I'm done. Like, I'm lovely to see you, but I'm going away." Whereas at the start, you try and suffer it a bit. I was out on a few nights out, and I wanted to be the last one home because I didn't want anyone to say, "Oh, you know, you don't drink anymore, and you're going home first." I would be the last one driving home at 3 a.m. And when really, if I'd have had the balls and the confidence, I would have said at like 11, 12 o'clock, like, "I'm done, guys. See you later." And I do that now. Because there's nothing good happens at midnight, is it? After midnight. So yeah, it's really powerful journey. You'll feel your emotions are a lot stronger. Like, you feel pure joy a lot more. Like, you don't have that imbalance of, you know, ups and downs of drinking and all those setbacks. And you just feel like you're continuously getting better every single day in every way. Like, from a work perspective, never been as productive. It's that's an amazing feeling. To be all over it.
Are there any negatives to not drinking?
Any negatives to not drinking? Nah. I guess there's just some people that I've realized that I only sort of see because of drink. So I'd go and catch up with them usually at the Mitre, for example, in the city for a beer. And I still go and do that, but I don't have the inclination to go and do that as much anymore, but I still miss them. But if I said, "Do you want to just go for a walk of the town, or do you want to go and hit some golf balls, or do you want to have a lunch?" They probably would do that if I really pushed it, but it's harder. Whereas if before I could see 10 of them in one fell swoop just going for an afternoon on the beers. So I think the negatives are that there's some people that you only saw because of booze, and that doesn't mean that their friendship was fake or it wasn't good. It's just that that was the central point. So I reckon I've seen a few mates a bit less, but that would only be a pushing it for a negative. Everything else is an absolute positive. Yeah, there's nothing else at all.
Mate, this has been brilliant. And you've actually unleashed lots of pearls of wisdom and pieces of advice. But if somebody's listening to this and they are inspired, quite rightly, and they should be, and they say, "Right, okay, next week, I'm never going to go and have a few drinks this weekend, but next week, I'm going to do this, I'm going to tackle it, I'm going to try and nail it once and for all." What would be the number one piece of advice you would give them going into that next week?
I'd say write down the reasons why you want to stop drinking, or you want to, no, yeah, not cut down. Write down the reasons why you want to stop drinking, and write down what you think your life could look like if you didn't drink, what things you think you would achieve. And every time you're having doubts about drinking, or you're getting pressure, or you've got something coming up, just read over what that means to you and what the negative effects of drinking have had in your life, and really reinforce the positivity of not being able to have a drink in your life, and what that might mean. It might be more money, might be better health, might be all these things. And just don't ever stray from that. Just don't ever stray. Try and get a friend to do it with you. That's amazing if you can, but just do it and just own it and know that you can do it. Like, I reckon I was probably one. Would Pete, you've known what I was like with drinking. If I can do it, then anyone can, really. I think I would have been one of the most, like, if you look at cliche recruiter drinkers, English, I was the poster boy, wasn't I?
Well, you were at the Stone Roses that night, mate.
I knew you'd mention that. I nearly wrote it down so I could hold it to you and go, "Look, I knew you'd mention that one." Yeah, so I think anyone can do it. And read, listen to those books, get a buddy to do it. Write down the negatives and the positives of drink, whether it's in your life or not, and share all of those things with the nearest and dearest with you, and they'll support you like you wouldn't believe.
Mate, congratulations! I'm so happy for you. I'm going to stop short of saying I'm proud of you, because that'd be a bit wanky, but I'm very, very, very happy for you and those around you who've benefited from this wonderful change in your life, mate.
No problems, mate. Thanks for having me on. Hopefully I haven't rambled too much and come across as though I'm preaching. I'm very passionate about this because, it's made a huge difference to my life. So obviously I'm going to talk about it in such ways. So yeah, hopefully somebody else out there like me 10 months ago listens and thinks, you know what, maybe it's time. Good time to do it as well. Winter is coming.
Cheers, Paul. Mate, thank you so much. Continue the good work, my friend, and good luck with the podcast next week.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Cheers, Paul.
Bye.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Recruitment Journeys. Now,
Whilst we are very passionate about bringing to you inspirational stories from the recruitment industry, our day job, our bread and butter, if you like, is recruitment to recruitment. That's what we do. So if there are any recruiters out there listening to this podcast who are thinking about their next chapter, and they just want to have a confidential chat about what's going on in the marketplace in their respective cities, please do not hesitate to reach out in the strictest of confidence. Call me, Pete Watson, on 0432 666 701 or drop me an email at pete@mintrecruitmentgroup.com and you will find me on LinkedIn as well. I'm all over the place. Thank you so much for listening and hope to see you again.